Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Night Shadows. I'm Stuart Best, where the paranormal is normal, where that which you thought you knew, you didn't. And where the future can be known if you know exactly where to look.
Well, good evening, everyone. And I'm Stuart, as you probably already have guessed. And we have Larry on board. And we are hoping to get our guest on. But Richard did say that he might not make it quite on time. So, hi, Larry. How are you doing?
Hey, Stuart, thanks for having me.
Boy, what's going on here? Let's start with this Trump operation. I mean, this is getting wilder and more serious, I think, by the minute. What's your take on the latest here?
Well, it's very interesting. It's a classic, really, what you've said for some time now, ruler against ruler, you know, in Jeremiah. That's exactly what we're seeing playing out. And it's playing out now to the degree that it's basically left politics, and it's now in the streets. Now, you know, there were protests today again, and the protesters are not stopping. Again, I'm concerned because I don't hear the people's voices. I just hear protesters yelling, and the Democrats, and of course the Republican Party, I don't know really where they are. The Republicans are not backing Trump. They're quiet, like the American people.
Mm-hmm. And I did hear, now this is just the latest that I heard from Fox, and I think you verified it, that there's a possibility one of the judges is going to go for a reopening of this case. Now, what would you make of that? Are they afraid, possibly, that these three judges actually have done a dastardly deed? Because it's obvious they didn't rule on the case. It's obvious it's political. And maybe they think that they're going to be the laughing stock. Why would you reopen it if you agreed with the three-judge ruling? I guess that's my question.
Well,
what would you think?
Maybe that judge was so alert that when he listened to those three judges, that's so-called, I hate to say that, but so-called judges that ruled over Trump, talk about everything but the Constitution, this was about a constant, and Jay Sekulow last night reported that this was, you know, not that people were listening very loudly, but this was a constitutional crisis that we're in between the executive and the judicial branch. Pat Buchanan said this morning, Trump needs to remove their power. He needs to go into the struggle and remove their power. They have no authority where they're stepping. And maybe this one judge, and I did hear it confirmed on Lou Dobbs a while ago, that he stepped in and asking for a full panel of judges to hear this again, because these three judges never even mentioned the Constitution, and that's what it was all about.
Yeah, they didn't mention the document in front of them. All they did was go on what one could call a fishing trip to make Trump look like an idiot, and therefore they would rule against him. And it's very, very odd, though, for one of the judges, I would think, of the Ninth Circuit to petition for a reopening, unless they're trying to short-circuit in some way we don't understand, Trump by doing this. So it's very, very interesting. But it's also extremely dangerous. I don't think the American people realize how dangerous this is when you can have an upstart judge in some small county actually override the president on a national security issue. Now, you know, if it was an iffy case where you could have it decided both ways and it really didn't involve national security, I guess, you know, that's one thing they do. But this doesn't look that way. This looks like a communist move, because I know a lot of the people probably think progressives, but progressives are communists, pure and simple. They just renamed it to make it a little better. So I'm not sure what this latest move could mean. But anyway, it is getting more, how do we say, nasty when you have the Secretary of Education blocked from entering a school. I mean, this is insanity, pure and simple.
Well, you also, and I was a cop for years, Stuart, and you also wonder, why are the police not arresting? You know, no one has a right to break the law. No one has the right to block somebody, to push somebody, to cause disorderly conduct out in the open, to cause the troubles they're doing, the riots. There are laws against that. Some of the riots, you know, I remember back years ago, a lot of the states had put in their own statutes about riots, and you could get 10 years or more for just doing what these protesters are doing on a daily basis, and they're not using this. They're not. I don't know where the thin blue line is. I don't know where it stands today. But then again, Stuart, I'd like your opinion on this. I'm wondering if Trump has a plan they're not aware of, and maybe we're going somewhere we don't even know yet.
Okay, I think we got Richard. Richard, are you on?
Yeah, I've been on, but you guys couldn't hear me for some reason.
Oh, okay. Well,
Richard,
we got you now. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
No, great. I just wanted to – I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to jump in here. I think the whole deal that you guys are discussing is all about the Ninth District and these three judges that have taken it on themselves to override the president, which is completely unconstitutional. I can't even understand how they're given enough power to even carry this out. It seems ludicrous to me.
Well, not only ludicrous, but dangerous, because if this is allowed to stand, that means any judge anywhere could challenge Trump on anything he does. Which,
right.
You know,
I think that's the plan from the left and the Democrats. I believe that's the plan all along, is to use the judicial to block Trump forever.
In other words, use the judicial. Yeah, go ahead.
He didn't want any of his cabinet members either, because I think that all of the people he's chosen are basically a threat to the establishment, especially to the far left, which these guys are a part of. I mean, they're basically from they've been overturned in their rulings 80% of the time because they're so ultra left. And, you know, they'll probably be overturned again. But meanwhile, we have terrorists coming into the country. I don't know if you saw the news item about Assad saying, yes, there's terrorists are part of those people that are coming in from Syria right now.
I did. Well, I saw that, and they're also reporting that on Fox, that Bashar Assad, and he warned through a Yahoo News reporter, actually, and said that he can guarantee that refugees coming in are confirmed terrorists, and he doesn't understand why we won't block them. And, of course, we understand why they're not being blocked.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I don't know about you, Richard, but I think this is just part of the communist coup. They call them progressives, but they aren't progressives. They're Marxists, they're communists, and they're socialists. And this is a communist coup, and they're going to use, you know, they've had years to infiltrate the judicial system. They've had years to infiltrate the educational system. The NEA, or whatever they call that outfit, is clearly, I even read one of their statements where they came right out in the open, said, we are socialists, we're Marxists. And so was it that – yeah, go ahead, Richard.
No, I was just agreeing with you. I think that there's this problem that I think that the majority of Americans that voted for Trump realized there's something going on behind the scenes, and they didn't want someone from, you know, another Beltway politician coming up and basically not doing anything. We wanted someone from the outside, whether or not he's all that experienced, because we knew Trump knows what he's doing. If he doesn't know something, he's going to get the right people in place and direct them to do it, because that's what he does. He's an executive businessman. And, you know, executives don't do it themselves. They get the right people in that are the best in the world and get them to do that. And that's the kind of team he's put together, and it's a huge threatening force to these people, because it exposes all of their crooked behavior and corruption, and there's been a lot of it in our government.
Well, you live out there in that great state of California. Have you heard anything locally about this Cal exit, or, you know, where they want to break off and be their own country? What's the attitude out there?
It's not that there's all these people in California are all leftists. They would like for you to believe that, but that's not totally true. And then there's what I call old Hollywood versus current Hollywood. And there's a lot of people in the current Hollywood scene that are progressives, and they're pushing an agenda. I mean, they still love Obama and wish he was president. I mean, it's really incredible. But there's a lot of other people who just can see right through all of that and go, you know, I was talking to my friend Bob the other day, who's in special effects and has, you know, been doing that for the past 30 years. And he said, I just worked on this movie. Well, actually, I think it was a TV show, Dexter. He was working on doing special effects for it. He said, you know, there's all these young kids on the set, and they're all brilliant minds, and they're all leftists because that's all that they know. And that's kind of the way it is. And yet we know that Hollywood is dominated by the people who have the highest positions generally are Jewish. It's really true. And yet not all of them are leftists. They have their own beliefs, but it's really difficult. And I think there's this feeling that, you know, some of the producers I've talked with, that they would rather believe something to them that's a lot more believable than the Book of Genesis would be the work of Zachariah Sitchin, of how we got here, that we were seeded here by aliens and so forth. So you see movies coming out, you know, like that. And that's where this is coming from. And they're in for shock, is all I can say. And yet, what really interesting, because, and I don't want to break up your conversation here, but I again have Rabbi Glaserson is in Los Angeles this week. And you'd be surprised, because the two of us met with Roseanne Barr, you know, the comedian, and she's a really great lady. And Roseanne is Jewish, and she was at around the table telling us. She said, "Well, you know, I helped get Trump elected." So, not everybody is what you think. I mean, there's a lot of people working behind the scenes that still have, you know, their sanity. We're concerned about our governor. Jerry Brown has been doing things that absolutely makes no sense, and it's a total left agenda. And there's no fiscal planning that makes any sense. And California's taxed to the hilt, and it's becoming more and more difficult just to live here. And yet I have to, for the work that I do, and I love the state. It's a wonderful state. We just have a crappy government.
Mm-hmm. Well, how far left is Brown anyway? I mean, is he pretty much far, far left, isn't he?
Well, he is. He's also in bed with the gas companies and things like that. When we had the gas leak in Porter Ranch about a year ago, they stopped it about a year ago this month. Aliso Canyon gas leak that was the largest spill of natural gas in U.S. history. Brown didn't do all that much about it because he's connected to the gas company. He got money from that for his election. So, I mean, it's like this is a problem all through our politics. It costs so much money to get elected, and people end up with strange bedfellows, and then when the chips are down, they have no stomach for going after them. And this is a real problem. This is why Trump is so valuable, because he's already a billionaire. He doesn't need anybody's money, and he can't be bought off by anybody. So he can just go in there and do what he needs to do. And as long as he keeps a level head and doesn't put out too many crazy tweets, I think he's going to do more as a president than we've had in, I don't know, decades. I really think he has the potential of really cleaning house big time, and I think that the Beltway politicians are frightened of him. And
well,
some really
hate
him.
They probably should be very scared of him. Larry and you, Richard, what do you think Trump is going to do to bypass this court? He's got something up his sleeve. He seemed very relaxed when Larry and I were talking offline. It's kind of like he's extremely relaxed and seems to not be concerned. What do you think he's got up his sleeve?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, both of you, actually, and you, Larry, too.
If you go back to... I'll just say this so Larry can chime in here. When you go back and watch some of his old TV shows, The Apprentice, there was one of the shows where he mentioned that every day he goes to work like a fighter, and he likes that. I think he's not to be intimidated. Well, he's accused of having a thin skin, but yet at the same time, I think he doesn't get pushed around, and he's used to this. If he's built enormous buildings all over the world, he's had to deal with some really crazy people, I'm sure, especially in foreign countries. So I guess one thing that I'm sure he has a whole bunch of lawyers that he's used to going to straighten this out for me type of a thing, because he would have to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah,
what do you think?
Absolutely. I kind of laughed when they started this deal on the West Coast, judges against Trump, filing lawsuits against Trump and the president. Because the reason I laughed is that's all Donald Trump has done for years. You think somebody going to sue him bothers him? He's a fighter, just like Richard said. I mean, that's what he does. And he is, you're not going to bother him with a lawsuit. You know, it's kind of like a guy that goes in the ring and fights every day. And when he's not fighting, he's actually practicing fighting. So if somebody like that's had years of training and continual, staying in good shape doing that, you think somebody coming up on the street that says, they're going to shove him if he doesn't get out of the way, that's going to bother him? I think Trump's almost in his and Richard, what do you think? I think Trump is almost in his heyday with this battle. I call it the Game of Thrones battle in American politics.
Yeah, I think that they're going to find themselves in a real difficult spot after Trump is through with them, because, I mean, they can't just do this, and they have to be stopped. They can't just continuously put up legal roadblocks for everything he does, especially if it's putting the nation at risk. Someone needs to go in there and get them disbarred.
Yeah. In fact, I'm surprised sometimes because of the rejection rate by the Supreme Court, you would think the people that put those guys into office or who were selected would have second thoughts about, what did you say, 80% of the time all their cases that reached the Supreme Court are rejected?
Yeah, 80% of them were rejected. And then we got people running the DNC that I'm concerned about Nancy Pelosi's mental frame of mind. I mean, she called Trump Bush the other day.
She's fighting
like,
President
what?
Bush. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazing to me. I mean, there's like some really weak-minded people in charge on their side. I mean, wasn't it Time magazine that came out and said, you know, the Democratic Party doesn't matter anymore? It's like almost gone. Nobody wants to really be a part of it. And yet we have these judges that are still feel it's their sworn duty to do anything to cause Trump problems. It's really quite astonishing. We've never seen anything quite like this in history.
Yeah, and at the same time, what's so interesting, too, is every time I listen today to Fox that it tracks some of the money and connections with this West Coast movement against Trump, and it seems like George Soros keeps coming up over and over and over again about being involved in the background funding this move against Trump.
Well, what bothers me is that nobody's tried to... Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
I'm just saying I heard a figure that he was paying people up to $2,500 a day to cause disturbances. And a lot of these people have done violence. I mean, this was like at the Berkeley thing. Some of the teachers there, professors, said they didn't recognize any of the people that were causing the violence. I mean, I don't know how they would know that many of the students to know, and all of those guys were wearing ski masks. But they, you know, typically, like, when there were other violence, there was evidence that these people were bussed in from somewhere else and externally paid. They weren't part of that town. They were brought in to create a disturbance just for the showmanship of it all. But what is also extremely weird is that only one person in that whole Berkeley event was arrested after $100,000 worth of property damage was done. Now, I find that really strange that someone had enough power over the police department there to tell them essentially to stand down. And I'd like to know where that order came from.
Well, that would have to come from.
Yeah. I was just going to mention, isn't Janet Napolitano the head of that college?
Yes. Yes, she is.
Well, that's look back.
Stewart says yes.
Okay. That might be part of the answer. We know where she works from and who she works for.
Yeah, now she was head of Homeland Security, right?
That's the one that said the border was perfectly fine under Obama.
Yeah, right.
She ought to read the Bible, because the Bible is very, very clear that God himself has opened those borders. You find that in Jeremiah. I will fill thee with aliens. And then when you go into Isaiah and cross-check it, of course, these aliens are the ones who cause mischief in the cities, and that's when we start to really topple and go down. I think this is very carefully orchestrated. I still don't know whether Trump knows all about it and whether he's legitimate or not legitimate. I guess it really doesn't matter, because it seems like two things are going on here, that the Lord has brought Trump in for two things, Israel and for judgment upon the American people. What do you think? Either one of you, or both?
Well, I'll answer real quick, and then I'll give it to you, Richard, because it appears that, and I call Trump judgment. That's what Cyrus was, the original Cyrus, the Persian king, when he came to Babylon at that time, and he actually released the people of God to go, rebuild their city. And he let them go, but however, he was really incredible judgment to Babylon, because remember, after that occurrence, you never heard about it again, actually, until Saddam Hussein began to try to rebuild some of it. But also, it seems there's a really focus moving now towards the Middle East, biblically, strategically, even politically. And Trump seems very empowered in protecting Israel, and at the same time, there are reports, about the Sanhedrin in Israel, talking about the new temple and Jerusalem being the capital, and Trump going to move an embassy, the U.S. embassy, to Jerusalem. So there seems to be two things going on, a time of judgment over America and a time of strategic movement towards happenings in Israel and the Middle East.
Well, this is pretty amazing, and if you go to our official Torah Code website at endtodarkness.com and click on the Trump Tables link, there's some really incredible gematria that Rabbi Glazerson sent me, and then I talked with him about it this week while he was here. He was at my house yesterday. And so we've been doing tables together and new things, a couple which I sent you guys, but he said some astonishing things to me this time, which I was just shocked and amazed with. I mean, more so than probably other times that we've talked together. We have a great time, going through all of, and he always never fails to tell me something I've never heard of before because of his background. I mean, I keep saying to him, Christians and Jews have to come together. I want to know what you know. I want to know why you believe what you believe. I want the reasoning behind it. And I think that we don't have time to mess around anymore. We have to get together and do this. And he said an astonishing thing to me. He said Christians, and they're looking for Messiah, for Jesus Christ, has actually caused the Jews to pick up that idea again, because a lot of them, he says, don't believe in a Messiah.
Oh, really?
And when he said that, I'm going, oh, that's crazy. And then I said, have you done any tables on Yeshua recently? And as always, he always gives me the problem of it is that Yeshua is a very short word, and it's in the Torah codes 1,000 times. So the statistical nature of it is questionable because it's in there so much. But he found this table, which is, he didn't want to show it to me. I said, why? And he says, because I don't want to offend you. I said, you're not going to offend me. What does it say? And in a sentence it says, rectification of Yeshua. And I said, does it give a date? And he said, well, yeah, but if I look at it, and we were trying to find the smallest table, because that's what we do. We try to find a table where it couldn't be misconstrued as an accident or just, something that isn't really great. And so I'm watching him, and I said, is it, what year is it, does it bring up? And he puts 5777 in there. And we're both amazed to see that 5777 came right up against the bottom of the sentence, rectification of Yeshua. So he says, so it proves clearly, he always says, that something is going to happen this year. Now, I don't know what that means, but everybody is feeling like something's about to happen. Everybody is sensing that. And the whole idea, I said, so what are you talking about, rectification of Yeshua, of Jesus? And he said, well, rectification is like a Jewish thing, that it will be set straight, that things will be put right, anything about Yeshua will be corrected. And I said, okay. And he said, then he told me this really this really strange Jewish belief that I had never heard before, that there may be two messiahs and they merge into one and it becomes Yeshua.
Hmm. Well, now they're looking for a political messiah, are they not? Basically?
I think they're looking for someone, I think they're looking for a supernatural messiah as well as one that will solve all their problems and bring peace. And, of course, for Christians, it basically says that the Antichrist character, whoever that is, whoever's revealed, will be destroyed by the splendor of his coming, which I think is really a really cool thing. But there's also the idea that the skies roll back like a scroll and all of these things happen, which almost makes you think that, are we living in a digital simulation? Is this really real? Is life not like what we think it is? So when Jesus comes, will all of this be exposed for what it really is? That's what I'm wondering, if that's what actually happens. And Gleason always talks about the physical world, which hides the spiritual world.
Yes.
Like there's two earths. There's like two, and one gets peeled back. And then that supports the whole New Testament theory of the sky rolling back. I mean, all these things, I said, we're so close in what we believe. We're just saying it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have time to mess around with it. And then he, a couple of weeks ago, he sent me this thing about Trump, because we were talking about Trump. It was the Gematria, which is basically how each Hebrew character has always been assigned a number, and you add words up and you get a number. Well, we know right now that the Paris Conference, that there's 70 nations coming together to try to give Israel problems. If you go to the Hebrew words Paris Conference and you add up those letters, it's 777. This is 5777. When Trump was inaugurated, this is even more bizarre, he was 70 years, 7 months, and 7 days old on the day of his inauguration as president, 777.
Yeah.
We're living in the Hebrew calendar year of 5777. And then months ago, which we've mentioned, I think, on the last time you guys so graciously asked to have me on the show, I mentioned this table. It says Donald Trump, United States President, on the 7th of Chesvan, which is the Hebrew month. The 7th of Chesvan is really the 8th of November.
Mm-hmm.
And it says Trump, and then right in the middle of all those words, it says Cyrus. So it's comparing Trump to King Cyrus from the book of Ezra. Cyrus was the guy who rebuilt the temple. So here's the new clincher to that. Trump is the 45th president of the United States. If you go to Isaiah chapter 45, it reads this: "Thus says the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have held." I mean, it's just like it's talking about Trump.
Yeah.
To subdue the nations before him, loose the armor of kings, to open before him the double doors so that the gates will not be shut. I will go before you and make the crooked places straight. Now, there is this rabbi who doesn't believe in Yeshua, but he's a really smart rabbi out of New York that believed that it was a divine thing that Trump got elected, because everybody was against him. All of the media, all of the Beltliner, D.C., everything. And so here in Isaiah 45 says, "So the gates will not be shut. I will go before you and make the crooked places straight." Well, the only thing that could have done what happened to Trump was God had to intervene and allow this man to become elected. That's really what I think has happened there. And a lot of other people think that as well, because it makes no sense. that he was able to do this. And usually when things make no sense, they have their origin in some kind of spiritual thing going on,
yes.
Which is what seems to be happening with anti-Semitism just arising out of nowhere. Why does everybody all of a sudden want to cause trouble for Israel? They haven't done anything. It makes no sense. But, you know, there again, you know, and of course there's good Jews and bad Jews. So there's good people in America and bad people in America. There's good and bad throughout the world. It doesn't mean that all the Jews are bad or all Americans are bad. There's both kinds. And I'm the first person to say that. But, you know, it's like, when you see a move sweep the entire world of anti-Semitism, that makes no sense, and it has to be spiritually motivated. And all these things are all part of prophecy. I mean, these things have to happen. And a lot of the people don't know their own scriptures. They don't know Ezekiel 38. They don't know what is supposed to happen with Iran.
Yeah. Well, you know, this hatred for Israel, the hatred for the people of the Lord is a spiritual thing, and I think they know unconsciously that Israel is there for their demise. It's not a conscious thing, it's just something that I think they're aware of, and so, Israel is going to trump, we should say, the world affairs. It's the center of all biblical prophecy in the latter days.
Yeah.
And it's come up exactly as the Lord said it would come up. You know, as in the days of Noah, and Noah had 120 years. And if you date it from 1897 and the first Jewish Congress to lay the foundation for Israel, and you come forward your 120 years, you're 2017. 2017, as far as I can see from every avenue I've looked at it, is a key pivot year, not only for Israel, but for the entire world. I don't know what's going to happen. But whatever it is, we are entering into a time of, I believe, trouble. And I'm fascinated by the code here from your friend, rectification of Yeshua. Could that possibly mean that they begin to recognize who he really was?
I don't know. I think, like with all Jewish things, it's steeped in Judaism, and there's always like a bunch of meanings for the same thing. But I could imagine that there could be that could start occurring. It wouldn't surprise me if that wasn't the case. I've been praying that stuff like that would happen. Because we're so close on our beliefs, and I mean these are the same men that brought us the Bible, and
yes.
And it's almost as if we've kind of forgotten that. And there's another table he did. We did it together in his little hotel room on my computer, but it was, you know, just recently there was a missile fired from Yemen to Riyadh. But you'll never find that on mainstream media. I think Fox may have covered it finally, but we found out about it hours before anyone else did. But there was two missiles launched from Yemen into Riyadh, and we don't really know the result. I think they may have had like some Iron Dome technology there in Saudi Arabia to shoot it down. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it didn't do a massive amount of damage. But what we've heard is they were Scud missiles. So those are really big. Those are really serious rockets. Those aren't these little missiles that Hamas has been sending over, what I call metal bottle rockets. These are big, heavy. You know, these can do major damage. But we have a Torah code that in one sentence, Lederson found, from Yemen missile, all in one sentence, and right crossing that says Houthi, who's the ones that sent it over there, on Shavuot, which is the month that it happened. And then just below that it says Islam, so because it's Islamic. And then in parallel to most of these other words, it says Iran, 5777, Shiite terror. I mean, it's a pretty interesting table that he came up with, and he has others
really?
Too, like this.
Yeah, that one's incredible to me, Richard and Stuart, is the fact that that code also has 5777 in it, plus Iran. And we do know that most all the missiles being fired out of Yemen are Iranian-provided missiles. And I was wondering, because I've mentioned to both of you guys, of course, Stuart and I have talked about what he calls the Daniel 8 war that's coming. And I don't know if you heard the headlines today, but, of course, today was a big celebration of the Iranian Revolution, and they threatened Trump and Israel and America. And today, it was very interesting. He got on his plane, Air Force One, and in flight, he gave a message in flight to the media, and it's recorded. I watched the report on it. He basically said to Iran, be very careful. What do you guys think about a Daniel 8 war?
I was going to say, I think it could be the Ezekiel 38 war. I mean, it was really – I was amazed at the meeting we had with Roseanne Barr. I was completely floored by her comments. First of all, I was starting to explain the Torah codes, and she said, I know all about them. I've watched all your videos. That's what she told me.
Wow.
I said, you have? She said, yeah. And then she goes, how can I help? That was her next comment. And she said, I want to know all about Nibiru. And is this the end of the world? Now, this is Roseanne Barr asking these questions.
Yeah.
Well, she's very smart.
And she's very smart. She's very up on all this stuff. She reads all the Jewish texts that she can find. Lazerson left about 10 books on her table for her. And I said, well, if you want to know about Nibiru, you need to watch this. And I left her a set of watchers because we've got Nibiru in there several times. But, you know, I no longer believe that Nibiru is a crazy fringe idea. I think that this is all part of the whole end time scenario, and just because we don't see anything yet doesn't mean we won't. And I think it has to do with, I mean, I was just researching the whole Fukushima thing again today. I mean, you guys have seen that, right? There's like 530 sieverts of radiation coming out of reactor 2, I think it is. That if they send a robot in there, the robot only can last for 2 hours before the wiring inside of it melts.
Mm. Wow.
And it only takes 4 sieverts to kill you. This is 530. And so we've got now, they're detecting, from what I've read, radiation along the coast of California. And that radiation in the fish. Yeah, there's radiation in the fish that we're probably eating. And I went out and bought a radiation detector. I'm going to start taking some readings on these things, seeing if I can find anything. I mean, I don't know if how bad it is or anything like that, but you know, what's really interesting, and I've mentioned this before, and I don't want to be repeating myself, but sometimes for people that haven't heard this before, there's a scripture in another Jewish text called the Talmud, and it says, the Messiah will not come until a fish cannot be found to feed a sick person. And you go, well, how could that ever happen? But now we can see how it could.
Yes.
And there's another translation of it that makes it sound as if the fish is swimming in oil. In which case, like the Gulf disaster that happened a few years ago, all of that, and I don't know if I would really want to eat fish from the Gulf at this point because of all the corrosives that was put in the water and the chemicals and everything else. It's going to take decades for that to really flush out. So the world's in really terrible condition, and then we've got the. It's basically the Great Pacific plastic garbage patch that's floating in the South Pacific that's as large as the country of France. And now they're telling us that it breaks down, this plastic breaks down into smaller and smaller fragments, and then it gets into the food the fish eat, and the fish are eating this plastic, and then we eat the fish and are ingesting the plastic that's in the fish's body. And that's happening now. So it's like the world's got to be cleansed. It's, you know, it's time to dump the aquarium tank and put in fresh water and, you know, clean the gravel and do all the things that you have to do. And I don't know, you know, in Isaiah, there's all of these passages in the Tanakh that never made any sense to me when I was growing up. Why would the earth be turned upside down? Why will God sweep all of its inhabitants off the face of the earth? Why will not even a stick or a branch be left to the wicked? How does all that happen? I mean, there's all of these to me. It's Isaiah 13, Isaiah 24, Malachi 4, Joel 2. I mean, it just goes on and on and on with these prophecies, all talking about this time of judgment on the earth. And now it's quite clear, unless God does that, the earth will become completely so polluted that it will be unlivable. You know, either through radiation or anything else.
I was just going to what you're talking about, Richard. I take something called kelp, and I take it because it has iodine, you know, that we need. And recently at the health food store I obtained it from, there was a shortage, and I asked them, why are you out, I mean, of kelp? And they told me directly that the suppliers who had been obtaining kelp off the West Coast, all up and down the West Coast, were unable to use that anymore, that radiation had totally destroyed the kelp industry, and that they're now having to try to get it off of Greenland. So you're right, and this is moving. I had heard that a lot of the real high radiation was crossing in the atmosphere over Canada, in other words, north of us, but we know it's down
this way, too. I've heard that some of it has ended up in the freshwater in Canada somehow. I'm not sure how that works, but there are plumes of radioactive material in the Pacific Ocean. It was the last thing I read today. It's very disturbing information, and it's really dire. And there's just nothing about this in the mainstream media. They never talk about this ever. And they don't know how to stop it, I think is why. What can they do? I mean, this old plant that GE built was designed back in the 70s. And one of the guys that worked for GE resigned at the time because he felt it was so dangerous. The design was dangerous. And so they've had three, possibly four, we know three meltdowns for sure. And one meltdown is huge. Having one reactor meltdown is an enormous disaster. But they've had three and possibly four. And they don't even know how to deal with the problem because it's beyond what they've ever had to deal with before, and it's going to cost billions and billions to fix. And yet, they still talk about firing up one of the undamaged reactors. I mean, this is, it's crazy. It's like they don't even realize that, hey, guys, it's over. Enough already. Or the entire island of Japan is going to be completely unlivable. I'm surprised anyone can live there now.
Well, you know, even in the U.S., the last few years of Obama's administration, you know, while he was trying to kill coal, and the coal industry, like, that's really going to change the environment of this entire planet, you know. He was also having, at the same time, them try to restart reactors in the U.S. that were limping along with their own problems.
Oh, it's just the most retarded thing in the world. I mean, I can't even imagine why anyone would do such a thing. I mean, I was glad when they closed the San Onofre plant, you know, in San Clemente. It was not that far from where Nixon used to have his summer home. And they had done that because, you know, the reasons behind that, I'm sure you guys have heard about, they added more cooling tubes and to try to get more efficiency out of the reactor. And when they did that, they picked up a vibration, started rubbing together, and they started leaking radioactive material, and it really couldn't be fixed without shutting the whole reactor down. So the whole reactor is now shut down. It was started out in the 70s. Now, I don't know how many billions of dollars it's going to cost to decommission these things. It's incredibly expensive. This is not cheap energy, guys. I mean, this is like, it's a ridiculous notion to me in this day and age, in the 21st century, to think we're still using nuclear power to boil water. I mean, it's like, what? When it comes down to its essence, that's what we're doing. It's so retarded. It's like we're like, we might as well be still, you know, riding around in steam locomotives. It's just ridiculous what we're doing here. And you can't really, I mean, all of these systems are so old. And there's, I don't know, something like 135 nuclear power plants in the United States, and they're all leaking some material, leaking something, some kind of radioactive stuff, goo. And all of those, imagine the billions that would be involved to shut down even 50 of them.
Yeah.
We're talking trillions of dollars.
Well, and the Japan one is kind of interesting in the fact that they are constantly having major quakes over there, right around that area. All they need is an 8 or 8.5, and you really have got problems.
Well, yeah, let's build a reactor right on a known fault line, right next to the ocean, where it can become completely washed over in any kind of tsunami. I mean, it's like, oh, that's really smart. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
say,
think
Larry,
anyone
you said,
ever
yeah, go ahead.
Could
go
imagine
ahead.
It would have gotten as bad as it has gotten so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, Larry, you mentioned that Trump told the Ayatollah or whatever his name is in Iran to be what? To be very careful?
To be very careful. You know, Iran is on the move right now. They've been moving their missiles around. They've been making threats. Also, their proxies, Hezbollah, and, of course, ISIS has now infiltrated Hamas, and they're already firing rockets into Israel, even as we speak, basically. But Iran is making moves and making considerable threats. I listened on Fox today to a General Jack Keane, I think his name was, really good guy. And he said the problem with Iran is they have snowed and I guess you could say prodded and picked on American presidents for 36 years, and it has worked. And they never got so much money and everything they wanted with this last 8 years of Obama. So he said the danger is they don't know Trump. He said you can't tell Iran after 36 years of acting this way and being extremely aggressive that someone might take a stand, and he said Trump will.
Well, that's what I was thinking when it comes to Daniel chapter 8, because that is a latter-day war, and it appears, according to the experts that have really studied it out in Israel anyway, that it is United States versus Iran, and that we go in there and all but, I guess, clip their wings very well. So this may degenerate very rapidly into a Daniel 8 chaos, which then could trigger Isaiah 17 and then Ezekiel 38-39. That all could come down within weeks or a month instead of years.
So Isaiah 17 seems like we're already into that quite a ways. I mean, with Damascus, I mean, Aleppo is completely destroyed. I always go back to the drone footage that's up on YouTube of the area. It looks just like a wasteland, you know, with little kids running down the street exploring people's burnt-out apartments and stuff. It looks like something from a movie. But Daniel 8, I mean, I'm always quoting that one line that says, "And truth was thrown to the ground." I mean, that's where we are, guys. That's where we are right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this Daniel 8 war could be a very quick one, and Trump would be the guy that would do it if anybody would. Obama certainly wouldn't have, because he said he favored the Islamics anyway. So But Trump, on the other hand, might just clip their wings in real good fashion. And that's what, when I saw this Bible code that you brought, where Iran is really in the, Iran and Islam is right in the middle of this thing, made me wonder if what we're watching is the beginnings of Daniel chapter 8. In that prophecy, Iran does something, or something triggers them to go forth east, west, and south, and north, and evidently it's kind of a blitzkrieg attack, and gets the United States so angry that we do probably a cruise missile or aerial attack. Anyway, it says that we don't touch the ground.
Well,
and,
yeah, I recently heard that it could be that Israel has some kind of secret weapon that we don't know about. It would not surprise me that get underground. You know, I know we have these enormous bunker-busting bombs. I've seen them, you know, videos of them developing these things. They'll go, like, through solid concrete for, you know, many feet of that and explode underground. And if they were to do that, if Iran goes after Israel in a fashion that Ezekiel 38 seems to be describing, then Iran, someone would take him out, whether it's the U.S. with Trump or Israel. And then that would be, it would be a nuclear holocaust.
Yes.
It would be a nuclear disaster because radiation would go everywhere. And we seem to read about that, and L.A. Marzulli and I have discussed this a number of times, because it talks about men with special clothing marking all the bones, and then it took 7 months to do all that. And I'm going,
yes.
I said, why would they be doing that unless the bones were radioactive?
Yeah.
And why would
that
you be wearing special clothes? Yeah, it sounds very nuclear. And, of course, how is, you know, the prophet Ezekiel going to explain those kind of, you know, well, it's uranium isotope number. You know, he's not going to know those things. So he's got, if he's shown a glimpse of what happened through some kind of nonlinear time, which seems like this is what the prophets were allowed to see, he would describe it in terms that he would try to relate to as it was 2,500 years ago. So he would see these guys wearing helmets with plastic visors and these boots that, you know, protect you from radiation, and they're putting like a little plastic flag down to mark all these points and using tongs to pick up this radioactive material. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's what I think he saw. I think that's what the
scriptures
are
trying to tell us. Well, we got about a minute and a half left. How can people reach you, Richard?
Oh, I just go to, I have two websites, endtodarkness.com and endtodarkness.com. And please watch our film and or get a copy of it. It helps keep things moving forward. And then also the other website is pinlight.com, P-I-N-L-I-G-H-T. And then occasionally I put up new things on both sites as we're able to produce them. And I'm working on a book, but I don't have it finished yet. It's every time I think I'm making headway, something else happens, and I have to rewrite a chapter.
I know how that works. Larry, how about you? How do they reach you?
Oh, the quickest way to reach me is larrywtaylor.org. That's larrywtaylor.org. And, Richard, I really appreciate you coming on tonight. This has been so fascinating.
Oh, thank you. I really feel honored. I don't know why you guys keep asking me on, but I appreciate it.
No, you have a lot of very interesting information, and we're closing down, as you said, very rapidly, and people need to know this stuff. So, folks, we really appreciate you tuning in, listening, and thank you, Richard, for coming on, and Larry. Good night, everybody.
My pleasure, guys.
Good night.